Welcome to the Nightbird Radio Podcast. I'm Timothy Saylor, and I'm here with Lindsay Stark and David Payne, and we are going to be your hosts this evening as we sound out the subconscious, navigate the nocturnal, and explore the farthest reaches of our experience, coming at you from the great forest deep in the heart of the Kali Yuga. This is Radio for the Hauntological Turn. And welcome back, Nightbirds. It's great to have you back, and it's great to be back. How are you guys doing tonight? How's this eclipse? How's this eclipse treating you guys?
You know, I've got my my normal level of astro agnosticism, so it's just
that.
Everything's nice and normal for me.
Yeah, I normally like do a bunch of stuff, and I didn't do shit. I just cleaned the house, which feels like it's appropriate for K2, but still, like.
Yeah, that's good. I think that's a good transmutation, for sure. Yeah, I just squinted real hard. You know what I mean? It's like if you just squint hard enough and like do this, and like just
That's how you can look at the eclipse. Is if you squint enough. It's fine to look at it.
That's a good point. Yes. I was just trying to look like a, who's the guy from, like a Charles Bronson or something. But yeah, there's that too. Like actually looking at an eclipse. Does he squint even? Anyway. Cool. Yeah. So there's some crazy space weather going on as we do this. So that's always fun. We'll see if we have any like technical difficulties or anything. Hopefully, the Archons will treat us nicely. I should knock on wood when I say this shit. What am I doing here? So what I wanted to talk about on this episode was, as some of you may be aware, on the Discord that is available to Nightbird Radio patrons at Patreon, we are doing something called a Rune Walk. And so for the next year, we're going to spend 2 weeks with each of the runes of the Elder Futhark, all 24 of them. And so every 2 weeks, we're going to move to a new one, and we're going to spend those weeks meditating on those runes. And we're also going to be calling to the 13 Valkyries of the Grimness Maw. These are spirits, warrior women, who deliver the mead to the chosen slain in Valhalla. This is specifically these 13. I don't know if all Valkyries do that, but these ones do. And so we are calling for their mead, for their knowledge, for the mead of poetry, for that poesis, for that gnosis, for that understanding of these runes. And so I wanted to invite everyone to join us in that, but I also wanted to give a little context for like where we're coming from in doing that. And like what the, if you don't even know anything about the runes, I would invite you to join us as well, because it's a perfect opportunity to get to know them. It's very interesting to me to hear people's experience that have no experience with the runes, And this is for everybody. We were just talking about before we started recording. If you speak English, if you speak any Germanic language, this is you're downstream from this lineage. This is open to everybody. This is not a gatekept thing. This is not like a, this is not unavailable to you. This is for everyone, Take the runes. So real quick, David, I wanted to ask you about, this was really, I think, your idea to begin with. I think you brought it up. So do you want to talk a little bit about like where this came from for you?
Yeah. So, I mean, the idea has kind of been swimming around in my head for a long time now, honestly, like all the way back when like RSPM did their, their first big Deccan walk type thing. And, the whole time I was kind of like, okay, Deccans are cool. Like I've never been a super like astrological guy. It's just not my thing. So I didn't really connect with the Deccans that well, but I still like the idea of this like year-long initiation to like get into like right relation with something, right? And I've always been interested in Norse stuff, always been interested in the runes, so I've kind of always had this idea in my head that it would be really cool to do something like a Deccan walk but with the runes. And seeing, as we got 12 months and 24 runes, it's real easy math to just do 2 a month. But then you kind of get into the idea of like, okay, well, with the Deccans, obviously we have, this astrological pattern that we go to of the sun every 10 degrees or so. And like, if there's, there's like a set pattern to it. Like, what order should we do the runes in? And it's like, we either just go in just the normal order, just down the road, from beginning to end, just following the order of the Ents. Did find some other authors like Nigel Pennock had his whole own way of ordering the runes for like a runic, 12-month calendar based on kind of arranging them how it mostly fit with Germanic holidays, but there's still like a lot of guesswork and a lot of just UPG in that. And his method wasn't actually bad. Like even though there's no historic value to it, it actually did line up pretty well. Donald Tyson even had a method that he came for, like a runic astrology where he put them all, basically kind of on top of signs, basically going by like which runes are like fixed, mutable, or, et cetera. That one I didn't really vibe with too much at all. But the thing is I don't think it really matters. Like, I don't think you have to start Feihu on this certain date or this certain thing. Like, we kind of, set it all up with the equinox anyways, just because it was coming up and it was good timing. But since the runes aren't inherently astrologically tied or tied to any type of season thing, it kind of gives us a lot more freedom. Like, yeah, they do follow patterns of, like growth and patterns of like ice and hardship and patterns of like harvest, but that doesn't necessarily follow like an exact 2 week to 2 week to 2 week ratio. So I think the way that we're going about it right now of kind of just going in order makes sense, especially for kind of like this first experimentation that we're doing. So.
Who knows what the next one will be like. And that's cool. You're right. Like, no matter when you're listening to this, you can start this. There's no, it's not time bound to anything. You don't have to wait for the right astrological, like, you don't have to time planets and all that stuff. Like, sometimes it's fun, but like, dude, just jump in. You can just jump
Yeah,
in.
it's very non-fussy, which is really good, I think, and a good antidote to how so much of magic has gotten crippled by astrological obsessiveness. Just be like, just jump in and start talking.
Like, I think we started it like during Mercury retrograde, which is like generally not something you would do, but there's nothing that says you can't do a rune walk during that because there's nothing that says when you're supposed to do a rune walk because we're doing it.
And I mean, and even if you go back and look at a Deccan walk, okay, over a span of a year, you're going to have some real shit astrology no matter what the year is. So,
And the
yeah,
timing
at
on
some
that
point
kind of
you,
stuff. Go ahead.
yeah, I was going to say at some point you end up like with sort of a magical like minstrel tent where it's like, I can't do anything for this time frame because I'm unclean.
The moon is going to be void of course like 1,000 times. Like, it's a lot. It's not 1,000, but it's a lot. Astrologers, don't write me, please.
Sure.
For sure. Like, that, and also something like that where it's like, I like the roominess of this. Like, I think you just said that, Lindsay, like, where it's like, I'm gonna spend 2 weeks with this thing, so I don't have to like find the exact time where this angel is, empowered or whatever to like, and if I miss it, then I have to wait like another month or whatever, or a year, for the Deccans and stuff. I can just we can just kind of like let it unfold over those 2 weeks, right? Because like there's gonna be some days where I'm like, I'm not in this shit. Like, this week has been a good example. This is the first week we're on, and there's been some days where I'm like thinking about this nonstop, and like there's all kinds of cool stuff happen. Like, one of the greatest things that I love about doing magic with other people is sharing all the synchronicities that happen. Like, that's one of the funnest things to me. But then there's been other days where I'm like, I'm not thinking about it at all. I'm busy. I've got other stuff going on. That's why I like the whole, like, having the 2 weeks for it.
Right.
You can kind of just let it unfold how it's going to unfold. So,
Yeah, that's been a nice thing too, because like I've probably done like the full ritual like 3 or 4 times now over the span of like the last like week and a half or so. And you know, other days I just do like a quick little light an incense and chant Fehu a couple times and like I'm good to go. But it's like I like not having specific timing, kind of like you were just saying, because it's like when I feel like I really want to do something, I can just sit down and do it now. I don't gotta worry about like, oh, well, Friday at this hour would be better. Or it's like, no, I'm in the mood. I feel the inspiration strike. Like, so let's just go for it, you know?
yeah, I had that problem on other walks, like where it's like, I'm not feeling it right now, but this is the time I have to do it. Which is cool for like from a discipline standpoint is cool. But like it's not necessarily the greatest thing for like spirit contact. Like I'm incredibly bloated and I like am tired and like, you know, all this like I've had too much caffeine, but I'm also tired. Like you're probably not going to hear some anything. Let's be
Yeah.
real.
It's the reason why I never finished a Deccan walk. Started
Yeah.
it, you know, 3 or 4 times.
Yeah. And I started, I don't even think I ever tried. It's cool. I mean, this to me is a lot more obviously in my wheelhouse from what you know. I actually, it's funny, right? Like, I kind of made this decision at the beginning, like, of my year, like my birthday this past time, that I was gonna kind of like really just drill down on the runes this year. That I was gonna like kind of take all the extraneous stuff out of my practice and just really like spend the year with the runes. And so when you brought this up in the chat, David, I was like, oh, this is fucking perfect. This is like what I want to do anyway this year. Because I always kind of I decide a magical aim for my year around my birthday. Like, and it usually find, kind of ties into like the so to the perfection that I have going on, right? Like my Time Lord. But it doesn't always. And sometimes it's just it feels what feels right. And so this kind of lined up really nice for me. But that's so that's kind of goes back to what I was talking about before, where like this is fundamentally, dude, I think that it just seems to me like the Norse stuff is chaos magic-y as fuck. Because it's like every household has got their different way of doing it. Every village might have their different way of worshiping the gods. Every You know, warrior band has their different way of like envisioning Odin, whatever. Like, it's there are as many ways to do it as there are people to do it. And so, like, this is another reason why Reconstructionism isn't really for me. Like, I'm not gonna knock it, but like, it's not for me personally because, like, I don't think there's a standard for this because, A, it's been like, the way it was done is pretty much lost, right? Like we have the fragments and stuff, but we don't really know like how people did it. We know some, but like there's not like it's not the same as say you know, some other things that are like highly codified. It's not. But the, what's nice about that is that it's totally allowed to evolve in its own way as a living tradition with the people that practice it.
Yeah, I've never been super hard on the whole Reconstructionalism stuff anyways, because I mean, like you're saying, any religion that's still around right now, it's been around for hundreds of years. That's, you know, been going on. It hasn't stayed the same. So if Norse paganism had been written down and had a holy book and had, you know, a structured church organization and had an unbroken lineage all the way till now today, the way it would be being practiced today would not be the same as it would have been back in pre-medieval Scandinavia. So to say that you have to do it the same way doesn't make any sense to begin with.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, even if there was, yeah, even if we did have all these materials, it still wouldn't be practiced the same way. Yeah, that's a really good point. Nothing,
Yeah, it takes
yeah,
us
like,
back to sort of chaos magic logic of there is not one objective reality. There's just sort of different reality tunnels that we can view things through. So, adopting something like this, you can go in and say, like, well, I'm taking these pieces and using what works and not using what doesn't work. Like a good chaos magician knows how to do.
yes, and so that's one of the cool things about the runes is that we've talked about this on our last episode about the runes. Like the information is encoded in the runes. Like you work with the runes, and the runes tell you how you are going to do it, how you are, like you do it together with the rune. They don't even tell you. It's like a working, growing relationship with each rune, right? So like there are ways that I look at the runes that are completely personal to me. There are ways that you guys look at them that are completely personal to you, right? Like, and sure, there's stuff I've read, and but like most of the really good stuff, it's like this gnosis that just comes. It's like, oh shit, that rune looks like this to me. And then it starts to unfold and make sense. Like the information has been encoded in deep time through these runes. And that's the gift of Odin. That when we work with these runes, we are having the same experience he had when he fell into the abyss and grabbed them out of the abyss. So we work with these runes and we reach into the abyss and pull the meaning out from them. It's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that, like, I always tell people, because kind of like we were talking about earlier, I've gone explaining like Norse stuff to a bunch of different other magicians who kind of have this idea of like, oh, well, I'm not from an ethnic group that, or my heritage doesn't go that way, so I can't really practice this stuff, or or even asking if it's a closed practice or anything like that. It's like, even if that was the case, which it's not, the runes are kind of almost like agnostic in themselves. Like, yes, we've assigned them these values and these relations, and we've plugged them into things in the sagas that relate to them, or the different gods that relate to them. But they weren't there in the beginning of the practice with the Norse gods. Like I said, Odin went out and got them through magical journey, magic quest. They weren't part of this Norse religion or Norse practice, like from the beginning, that Odin and the Aesir and the Vanir were practicing like forever. Like, these were things that even he had to go out and get. So while they are kind of intertwined into Norse paganism and Norse magic, at the same time too, they're also separate enough that, like, you could not want to do anything else with Norse magic and still mess around with the runes and get results. Like,
Yeah, it'll work.
they plug and play with almost
Absolutely.
anything.
Yeah. I have a friend that he just doesn't connect with him at all. And but I had given him a bind rune and he was like, but that bind rune, it worked. Like it when I did it hit. And I'm like, yeah, I mean it's pure magic. Like it doesn't care what you think about it. Like that's why it's chaos magic. Like it Dude, like at the very fundamental level, these are fucking sticks, right? They're lines. And like, that's what everything is made of. And even if, because we don't even really know where they came from, right? Like, there's all
Right.
kinds of crazy theories of like their connection with like, isn't there theories of like their connection with like Sanskrit and stuff?
Yeah,
And
like one of the
Phoenician.
things with this Phoenician.
Phoenician. Phoenician.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad y'all are here. Because they look really similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. At some point, there's just so many ways that you can draw lines, though.
Well,
Who
that's the
knows?
thing. Like, that's the code of reality, right?
Lines?
Lines, yeah.
Nice.
Well, and that's one of, I mean, that's one of the main ways that like I look at runes, because one of my other big interests in career stuff is like pen testing, like cybersecurity, hacking, programming. That's like what I do. So if you think of like the web of weird as like this, like the net, it's like the mesh, it's like the actual structure or fabric or code of the universe, right? Each of the runes is like its own little command or subroutine. And it's by chaining these commands or chaining these subroutines is how you change the localized programming that then the rest of the system kind of adheres to in order to make it work. Like that's kind of how I always viewed it anyway. So they're these little tiny line symbols, but behind them is this like encoded information, and you're like overriding whatever is currently going on within the web.
And it works like that experientially, and not it's not just like this is the cool thing about it. Like, it's not just a theory. Like, I really implore anyone to check it out. Like, just take it for a spin and see what happens, because you'll get stuff and it's really wild. It just comes through like a door.
Yeah, something that we were talking about the other day was this, the sort of the connotation of it being sort of an ethnically closed practice, and some of that is like related to people out there, who are shitty weirdo fash motherfuckers in the world who have decided to adopt the practice for themselves. But like, ultimately, when you start to interact with these beings, entities, whatever they are, like they're just so hungry to be contacted that I think that's why people who are, of perhaps ill repute, like they jump onto it and think like, ooh, they want me because I'm such a good Scandinavian heritage person. It's like, no, they're hungry for us all. They just want contact and need that sort of thing. And so it's open to anyone, no matter what your background is, and I think that makes it so ripe for that kind of chaotic, jailbroken work where we're creating new ways to interact with it that have none of those gnarly connotations.
And dude, like,
Yeah, the whole idea of like purism and like purity within Norse stuff is so ridiculous anyways, because like, yes, I'm gonna base a racial purity idea off of a culture that literally intermarried anything it came in contact with and took the best parts of every culture it ever encountered and made it their
yes,
own.
dude, a pure
Yeah, absolutely.
meritocracy. A pure, like, the more I learn about that culture, the culture that came to being in with the interrelationship of these spirits. Like, sure, there's some like social class stuff, but like, oh, there always is, right? Like, but for the most part, it's like the most meritocratic. What's the
Meritocratic.
meritocratic society? It's like kings are chosen, war leaders are chosen based on their merit. Like, they don't care if you're like a Moor or like an Arab. Like, no, come on. You're good with a sword. Let's do this. You know what I mean? Like, there isn't like this, dude. To me, there's way less blood and soil in it than in most other things from that time period,
Yeah.
than most other medieval ideologies, you know, where you have like the divine right of the king that is passed down through the blood of like Charlemagne or whatever the fuck, like, or like its connection to the Roman Empire. I don't know. Maybe I'm like painting it with rose-colored glasses or whatever, but to me, it like from what I've read about it, it's like, no, this is just like, and you know, when the Lord stopped providing for his people, they would just burn him in his house.
Yeah. That's good praxis, I think.
Yeah,
But
I
yeah, but
mean,
also
cool.
like it just judging the past, like trying to reconstruct the past or judge the past by contemporary standards is just like a losing game regardless of what you're doing. That's why it's like it doesn't matter. Like if they were shitty people, like I'm, my academic background was in studying indigenous Mesoamerica, and like most of those practices were really fucked up, but it doesn't stop it from being a really interesting spiritual system to try to grok. Even if you're like, I'm generally opposed to like large amounts of human sacrifice of children. Controversial take, I know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, right? There's different ways that goes with like the Norse stuff. Like there's people that try to say that there was like basically no sacrifice at all, and that any that was like all free will sacrifice. And then, you know, there's the people that say like that it was like rampant. It's got to be somewhere in the middle, I think, like just like with anything.
Yeah.
Just people be sacrificing, man, you know.
Yeah.
But I do, I mean, I think the idea, if you want to, like, how do you jailbreak that, right? Like, if we're gonna do some chaos magic type thinking, right? If we're gonna approach this from a chaos magic perspective, how do you jailbreak sacrifice, you know? What is the sacrifice that Odin made for wisdom? Like, do you have to cut out your eye? Like, do you have to live a hard life to be wise? Like, do I have to make it hard for myself? What's the jailbreak there? And I think it is making those hard decisions Yeah, I lost my train of thought, dude.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't necessarily think it's like, you know, you have to have a hard life or you have to make things hard on yourself. But, you know, especially for me, my whole time working this practice, especially, you know, in a relationship with Odin, it's always been about basically forcing me to do things that would be good for me that I've been putting off for a long time, or that I always make excuses for, like, why I can't do it right now.
Yeah, doing the hard things.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for getting us back on track there. Yes, doing the hard things that I know I got to do. It's like lifting weights, man.
Yeah, and that's the thing, it's never a hard thing. It's never like, oh, you know, go sacrifice to me the super expensive thing that's going to put your family in poverty for a month just because I want you to prove something to me. No, it's always like, okay, yeah, you need to finally get in shape, or like, oh, that, you know, big event that you've been thinking of doing because you're going to learn all this stuff that you'd be putting off even though you could really go do it, like get off your ass and go do this thing. Or, you know, you've been talking about writing a book for 6 years, like, why don't you finally actually sit down and start writing something, you know?
Yeah. Or like, why
Yeah.
don't you become self-sufficient? Like, oh God, really? I gotta do that? What a sacrifice, man. But to me, it's funny, right? Because it's like, to the little self, it's like, oh man, that sucks. But we know that it's virtuous. We know that it's right. There's a part of us that knows, like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, when I go to the gym in the morning, like, when I don't feel like it, yeah, there's a little part of me that's like, I don't want to fucking do this. But the part of me that's like up there with the Valkyries is the one that's like, fuck yeah, we're going to do this. And like, how do I? It's kind of like that. We've talked about this a bunch on this podcast. Like, it's like the nightclub of spirits in my head, right? And like I'm trying to cultivate like a good clientele that tips and doesn't like fucking bust up the place every night, right? And like how do I do that? Like magic is one of the ways that we do this. And I would argue that like working with the runes and like again like we're doing like calling these Valkyries and these Norns is a way to do this, to like ennoble and empower the best parts of us, right? To do these tasks, to do the things that maybe we were afraid to do, or maybe we just didn't think we had it in us. I think that's what a Valkyrie does. So like talk about jailbreaking. So like there's this spirit that you die in battle, and they come and they pull you up into the halls of glory with your honored ancestors, right? So what is the jailbreak of that in my everyday life? It would be a being that is able to raise me up to something more than I thought I was able to be. To really engage with my most noble fate. That's what we're doing. Does that sound good to anyone listening? I hope so. David, do you want to talk a little bit about the Norns? Because you have an invocation in this that we're doing in this walk that calls to the Norns to teach us these runes. So let's talk about that a
Yeah,
little bit.
so I started working with the Norns a couple of years ago, and originally, like it was completely selfish. It was like, okay, if I want to make my magic more effective, like what beings can I like strike a deal with that is gonna make this shit happen a lot better? Well, the Norns, they weave everything into existence, right? So if I get them on my side and I do a spell and they're a part of it, like things are gonna happen better. So, a little more self-serving in the beginning. But by working with them and working out this whole ritual and an invocation and like a whole method of practice with them, like it actually kind of morphed into like a main part of my practice. Like invoking the Norns, and I got this whole meditation thing where I do where I see all three of them around me in a triangle, and there's like whatever I'm working on, I see like as a thread being passed between all three of them and being woven and cut and changed and positioned and rewoven, kind of like almost emanating this like webic spider web out from yourself, like out into the field.
Nice.
And that's become like a center operation for any Norse work that I do now. Like that's how I get centered into like the whole, current, so to speak. But through working with them and doing different things with them, like I started, doing like Runegalder and chanting and seeing with them, and like it turned from just like, okay, they're just helping me do this magic and making it more effective, to like all of a sudden getting like visions and dreams and like all of these weird things. Like a good example is like just the other night, I only did the Norn part because I was tired and I didn't feel like doing everything, and I just did like a Fehu chant like a couple of times. And then randomly that night in my dream, I just had this old, like really decrepit old looking like bog lady come up to me and like kind of snap my head down and start whispering something in my ear. And it was like this whole like Seder session with like her telling me all this stuff. And even though I couldn't understand what she was saying, it like unlocked all these weird like memories and visions and things. And then for like 3 days after that, I just kept on like getting like realization after realization of like different things with the runes that I had been working on or how they connected. And it's kind of been this whole mentorship thing in a way. But and I think the way that that works is kind of like what you were talking with the Valkyries, like not to sound super new agey, we're like, oh, we're like matching their energy vibration. I don't think it's like that. It's like, the whole idea of like, you can judge somebody by the company they keep, right? Or you model yourself after your heroes or the people, they always tell you like in self-help classes, like, oh, you want to try to hang out with and expose yourself to people that you admire or people that are doing the thing that you want to do. Well, I think we're kind of doing the same thing with these spirits in a way, is by calling them down and spending time with them and learning from them and just, passing ideas back and forth and just kind of being in each other's company. We're elevating ourselves in the direction that they're in as a sum of, elevation for ourselves.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, the company you keep. And it's like hanging out with smart people. You know, like when I feel like the dumbest person in the room, that's the best room I can be in. Like, I want to be around people where I'm like, what the fuck are these people talking about? You know, that has always brought me up to the level of the company I'm with. Like, I think it's an, I do, again, like maybe it's new agey, but I do think it's an energetic thing. You know, and it, when I was hanging out with a bunch of scumbags, I had really bad luck. And like, I didn't understand why all these negative people kept coming into my life. All this negativity kept coming into my life. And it's turns out it was this energy that I was surrounding myself with. And I do think that we attract the energy that we put out. Like I just think it's like a law of nature or something. Like it's a magnetism. I just think it works
But
that
you know
way.
what, that weirdly plays into too with the whole sacrifice thing though, because like you could be having a downturn and you could be in a matter of, a bunch of bad luck, and depending on your mental state and the people you're sitting around with, it can turn into a pity party, or like, oh, everything's fucked, there's nothing I can do about it, blah blah blah. But this whole, taking the Odin mindset of it is like, okay, there's some stuff that sucks. This is an opportunity now for me to overcome something and better my life or better myself. Like it's just this mind shift change from having worked with the Norse. Like you were saying with working out, like everybody has days where they're tired and they just don't want to go do it. But like I in like almost a weird like sadistical way now like to force myself to do. I find myself forcing myself to do things I don't want to do because I actually enjoy that process now.
Yeah, being in the crucible of it is really God, it's like a very addictive feeling. For sure.
Yeah, like I love nothing more than like being 100% done, but seeing that I still have like two sets, and like I just have to force myself to do them, even though I think I'm gonna die. And then you do it, and you're like,
Dude,
oh, it wasn't actually that. Like,
yeah.
this is why the deadlift is so good. Because it's like the second fucking one where I'm like, can I even do any more of these? And I gotta do like, I'm gonna do like probably 14 more of them. But I don't like at that moment, I'm like, I don't know if I can do this, but I do it. And it's like that training of getting just being able to just like push myself into it and just knowing like what my body is able to do versus what my mind thinks my body is able to do. I mean, we can get into like the nitty-gritty, like reps in reserve thing, like how many I have left in the tank. Like, I'll think it's like, oh, I got like one more. But if I go to failure, I've really got like five or six more. So, like, what does that say about what my mind, like the lim like limiting beliefs, right? What does that say about the power of my mind? Like, but it's interesting, right? Because when you condense it down to something that's like a simple lever movement of your body, dude, I'm able to like go into this place that I do feel like I'm Odin hanging on the tree. And like when I push myself into like into the area where I like don't know what I can do anymore and I do more, I get this like it is a spiritual high. I don't know how else to describe it. I know we're talking about working out now, but it's great.
Yeah,
No,
you
but I
can't
mean,
have me on and not have it turn into an exercise science episode. But yeah, no, Mark Rippetoe, who is a problematic but hilarious famous coach, always said that the deadlift serves as a way to train the mind to do things that are hard.
it's your
I was
mind
just going to
doing it.
add, like, it's like not even the same idea, but not even working out. Like how many times have you just like life has just been like just fucking kicking you in the balls over and over and over, and you're like one more bad turn and like I'm done, like I'm never going to recover for this. And then years later you look and you're like, yeah, shit got a lot worse for like another 2 years and I still survived. Like
Yeah, I was
when you
still
think
able
of
to do it.
reps of how much just bullshit you can deal with, usually it's a lot
Oh
more
yeah.
than you think, you know?
Bro, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I've been onto some rock bottom shit, so like that's you're speaking my language, bro. Lindsay, you're about to say something?
I was just, yeah, most people don't realize how strong they are. And it's one of the beneficial things about, I mean, it's what I always talk about with working out, but anything that's difficult and doing something where you are, any sort of a regular spiritual practice, to bring it back to the rune walk, even though it's not as prescribed as something like a like the astrological Deccan walk, like sitting here and saying we're going to do this for a year together with people and we're going to report in and I'm going to say, this was what my Fehu experience was like and what was yours like. It's like there's a certain discipline to that which will carry you to be a you will be more of a well-tested warrior on the other side of it.
Yeah, and I
Do you
think,
like how I brought that around for you?
yeah, that was good. Thanks. Because we could have just kept talking about working out. Yeah, and I think that's so, like, that is one of like the baseline natures of these runes is that like they came to us through that. Like the story of how they came to us is through someone doing that. Like thinking they were gonna die and dying and thinking they were nothing anymore, and then coming back with these gifts that they brought the people to use for. And here we are, however many years, you know, I don't know when they came around, thousands of years later, 1,000 years later, I don't know. But long enough to where it's like, okay, these are an enduring thing. There's obviously some juice here. But that's to me what's so attractive about it is, or one of the things that's so attractive about them is that the very story of the origin of these things is someone going further than they thought they could go. And what they came back with was power. That's what's on the other side of that door. And the power is for the people to use. It's for us to use. It's not hoarded by some priesthood. It's not like, you know, this closed practice that you have to really even be, like, you can be initiated into it 1,000 times in 1,000 ways, but you don't have to be initiated into it in one specific way.
Yeah, and that's what I really like about, the premise of what this rune walk could end up being is this is like a very personal. I mean, we're setting a very, very basic, very easy to follow, very loose structure for a self-initiation into the
Yeah.
runes. Like you gotta take, as much of it as you want or as little of it as you want, but as long as you actually just do something and just work with and kind of just throw yourself into, reading about that rune, playing with that rune, just drawing that rune out, like sleeping with it under your pillow, like just trying to get in sync with it as much as possible. Like things are gonna happen. Like this is the easiest open initiation system like in the world for runic magic, really.
Yeah. You could draw it in your mashed potatoes and then eat the mashed potatoes if you wanted to. I mean, know if, you know, I don't know what experience you might have, but I guarantee you'd have one.
I mean that's semi-historical. Like they would,
Yeah.
they would always take like sticks and they would carve their bind runes and they would take the dust and put it into their meat or put it into their food and eat it just to get part of that magic inside them.
Oh yeah, that's dope. Yeah, that's good. We should actually do this. I want to do some of that. Yeah, cool. So I'm trying to think. What else do we want to talk about this?
I
I
know
don't
the other
know.
thing we were saying about it just being, is like the most chaos magic of any type of system you can get into. Like that's the freedom of not having a Norse holy book or a structurized religion that's been around forever. There's not really a wrong way to do this. Like, I mean, I'm not gonna, if that's what you want to do, like good for you, but like I'm not gonna go and all of a sudden just like completely flip like historical attributes. Like I'm not gonna say like, oh, Odin was like a fish god or something or something random like that. But like, there's a lot of openness for you to just go out and work with them and learn firsthand what these relationships are right for you, and there's nothing more chaos magic. I love that I can do the most powerful transformative Norse ritual just by like hiking into the woods and cracking open a beer, chugging half of it, pouring it half on the ground, and then just talking to nature. And
Yeah,
that's like,
bro.
I get more out of that than like a huge, elaborate Enochian ritual,
You go
Oh,
hang
yeah.
out with a tree.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a It's a practice for like actual people with, you know, jobs and lives and families. Like you don't have to do the fucking Abra Melin to get your gnosis.
Well, and talking about it being like a household to household, you know, difference in the religion, like one of the aspects I love about this whole thing too is like, okay, unlike a religion, like if we were like if I was Catholic or something, right, where I would have to, you know, get my kids, you know, baptized and then, you know, do all the different, you know, steps and rituals and go to church on this date and follow these holidays and stuff, like it's more like it's organic. Like me and the kids will just be doing something and I'll be like, oh, that's like in this one story and you know in the Eddas, and we'll like talk and we'll like so like I'm imparting some of these ideas and some of these practices just like organically by the stuff that we're just out doing with my kids, and they're picking up on it, and you know, and I'm not forcing this upon them, and you know that there's some stuff they're super interested in, there's some stuff they don't care about yet, but it's like it's just really interesting how like it's just like a part of our lives. It's not like forced. It's not like, oh, we're this and we're also Catholic, or oh, we're this and then we have our Jewish side. It's like it's just who we are, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just what we do. I like it. I like it. Anything else we want to touch on? I don't even know how long we've been going. I think it's close to an hour. I think we're at a good spot. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we can do more. We can talk more. Yeah, I definitely I'm really looking forward to where this is going. It's been cool so far. Again, if you want to join us, come on. You're invited. It's open. We'd love to have you. I'll put the information how to get in on it in the show notes. But yeah, it's a cool adventure. So I
And like we said,
appreciate.
it doesn't matter what time you join in. Like if you join in 2 months from now, you can either start at the first rune or you can just start wherever we're at, so you're on the same page with everybody, and then just hit the other ones on the backside. Like
Yeah, that's a
there's
good
no
point.
set schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the runes are, I mean, it's to me they go in a circle anyway, right? So that's like a good way, actually a good kind of image for that. It's like it's a cycle. So like you can jump in on any part of a cycle and you'll hit the whole circle. Good stuff. Well, thank you so much, guys, for coming on tonight and chopping this up. It's been a blast.
It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, definitely.
And I look forward to what this walk will hold. Do you experience weird shit? Do your parents not like to tell their friends about what you do in the woods? Do you make more friends in a graveyard than you do at a party populated by living humans? Do you have interactions with beings that are not strictly considered human? Do other people look at you like you're crazy when you mention talking to trees in casual conversation? If you fist pumped or even just answered yes to any of these questions, you may be a nightbird. So let's sing together. If you'd like to come on the show and flap your gums with me, share your stories, or just talk about the malleable nature of reality for a while, then send me an email at tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. That's tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. I'd love to have you on the show. But until then, I gotta fly. But before I go, let me say this. Remember, you are never alone. I believe you.